Welcome, welcome to another episode of The Most High Show. Today is a pretty cool day. I have Mark Danzy in the studio. Mark did one of our very first episodes when we recorded the show, so it's pretty cool and special. I got Jeff here on the ones and twos. We got a clip coming from a day in the life episode we did for this guy named Jason, who runs a garage at a transitional living community here in Georgia. And Mark and I are going to talk about life transitions because he knows a little bit about that personally, and he helps people who are transitioning careers, mindsets, all that kind of stuff. So all that's coming up on this episode of The Most High Show.
Welcome to The Most High Show, a show about recovery, spirituality, and all that. Produced, posted, and hosted by people in recovery who have strength and hope and want to share it with you. If you or someone you love is suffering, we want you to know you are not alone. This is The Most High Show.
All right, we're back. We're back. What were we doing?
Talking.
Yes. Thank God there's another podcast out there because Lord knows we need more. So if you're thinking, if you're listening to this and you're thinking, I should do a podcast, you should. You should do a podcast too. So I'm going to play a clip from Jeff's going to play a clip from one of these series we're doing called Day in the Life. And that's where we go and show up to somebody who's living in long-term recovery. Not just living in long-term recovery, but living an epic life while in long-term recovery. So the point is to show you that recovery and sobriety isn't just coffee, cigarettes, meetings, and sadness. That actually you get to live a pretty epic life once you decide to be committed to a sober way. So this clip is my boy Jason. He runs Vision Warriors Garage, and that's part of Vision Warrior Community. And you're going to hear a little bit of his story. You're going to hear a little bit about Kirk. And if you're listening or you're watching, you can watch his full episode on the Most High Media app. All right, yeah, run that clip. Get out of here pretty early, huh?
Yeah. A lot of them leave at 5:30, 5:45. There's a few that leave that work over at, I guess, Triscapes. Those guys typically leave a little earlier. They start a little earlier. What's going on, Kim?
Hello, hey, buddy.
You good?
Talking about fishing now.
Talking about fishing,
yeah.
Let's
have a time here. It's not Friday. Yeah,
I'm
ready to roll.
Yeah.
And man,
oh, it's 5:30. Yeah, let me see. 6:30. It's not 5:30.
I'll see you at 5:30.
At 6:30. 5:30.
What are you doing here?
Huh? I was coming to harass you. It's like it's the.
You just stole my
interest.
So Jason is a peckerhead. I don't like Jason. No. So here's the thing. So Jason, I know when I met Jason Alvarez Service Center, you can see his enthusiasm to work, but it's his enthusiasm to build and to create. You put Jason in a box. Jason tries to figure out how to get out of the box. But Jason, the freedom that he's had here to rehabilitate, to create a day-to-day and how they invest, guys, I've seen that roll over and spill over into many relationships with the men, from more following him to church, going to different meetings, different, just the growth that's there. You know, we've had a lot of conversations as Jason in his past was on staff for nearly almost I think it was 38 or 39 months at an inpatient drug treatment center and restoration center here in town. Great organization, but it's a program. And I know the first couple months that Jason was here, he'd be like, man, they're not doing this, and they're not doing this, they're not doing this. I'm like, that's great. And he's like, what do you mean that's great? I was like, well, it's frustrating you. I said, that means that A, that you care, and B, you see something that you want for them that they can't see. And I said, the only way you can get that is to model it here, because here is life. We're teaching how to live life on life's terms, not how to run a program.
All right, so that was a clip from A Day in the Life, the episode with Jason. And it's a pretty interesting episode, pretty easy to produce because it's all happening on this compound up in Cherokee County. So, you know, one of the things I really like about doing these Day in the Lives is getting, like I said, to be able to highlight what it is like for people in long-term recovery. So to show that people do epic things. So there's other episodes on there. We have one with Wanja, who is a coach and a person in long-term recovery. We have one with Greg Champion. He's running Startup Recovery in the beautiful town, city of Los Angeles. And we're about to do another episode with my man Mitchell down in Serenby and his tree company / philanthropic way of giving back to people in recovery and people who are especially abled. So you can check out those episodes on the Most High Media app. And we're going to take a little break so you're going to hear some more stuff, and then we'll be back with Mark.
Why Most High Media? Because I don't have the answers. Other people do. And learning from the experiences, the stories, the perspectives, seeing people who've been through the darkest of circumstances and then have come out of it on the other side and have lived extremely exciting, fulfilling lives and tapped into a way of being and a way of living, but it's actually real and obtainable, that's why.
We packed up to tell the story of a young lady who lost her daughter.
So there's a extremely high correlation between suicide, mental illness, and substance abuse.
Come on the ground. Come on the ground. Sir.
I think as of this year, there's about 14 million people in America who have a co-occurring disorder, and a little more than 7% of them seek help for it.
You know, in my addiction, I felt like I was better off dead.
I'm here to talk about my daughter, Megan, who committed suicide when she was 28.
There's enough hope in the people that do recover to where I keep going and keep showing up at places where I'm needed.
If you need some things like love and change, I'm not talking coins and things or diamond rings. Everybody wants some change, but don't nobody want to do nothing till the pain they can't stomach. And they told me that I believed them, so I gave them to the everybody thought that I was tripping, saying that I'd be acting different.
Ain't no high like the most high. Ain't no high like the most high. Ain't no high like the most high. Ain't no high.
Ain't no high like the most high.
All right, we're back. And I'm just getting to it because I want to wrap with my boy Mark here. So, like I said, Mark was on the first episode. And it was a little controversial.
Did you get some feedback?
I got some feedback. But we also got some really good feedback. The first episode we did was about problematic sexual behavior.
Okay. Yeah, I remember that.
You remember that. Mm-hmm. And it was really impactful to have that conversation. We were really in-depth. You have some training in that area, which is why we were talking about it.
Right.
We wasn't just two dudes talking about that.
Problematic sex.
Right. You had some really good things to share in there. So And I've known Mark in various phases and stages of my life. And so over the last couple of years, he's been a development business coach for me, even beyond that. That doesn't even really say how he's been interacting. But his coaching has radically helped transform my life and inspired me to go and become a coach myself. So it's really special.
A very good one, I might add.
Hey, thank you. So it's my pleasure to welcome Mark Danzy to the Most High Show.
Glad to be here.
Yeah. You like that clapping?
Yeah, that was awesome. Almost a standing ovation. I haven't had one of those since ever.
Yeah. So let me ask you, we usually start with what's the day in the life of Mark like today? Mm-hmm. So why don't you set it up for people that are listening?
Well, I got up and I went to the bathroom and... day in the life. Well, I get to sit with some people having the worst day of their life often. Now, fortunately, it's not the same person every time. But as a coach, people come to me who are trying to figure out life. They're struggling with a relationship or a career change or, you know, transition in their life. And they just are in their head so much about it that they need a thinking partner. They need somebody to help them think clearly about what's really going on, why they're so worked up or anxious or angry or regretful or something like that.
Yeah.
And so I get to literally either online or in my office. Online, I have people all over the world that I get to have conversations with every day and or in my office and basically just start off with, so what's on your mind? And then they go for it. And we start developing a pathway for their life to get unstuck from whatever it is they're dealing with. So it could be addiction, could be problematic sexual behavior, could be a failed marriage, could be, a failed business. Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody is going through something.
Yeah.
At some point. It just depends on, you know, what depth or what level you're at. And sometimes you just need somebody to help you process through that. So it's not really, I'm not really doing therapy.
Yeah.
But what we do is therapeutic. But it's basically just coaching, life coaching.
Yeah.
So yeah, from morning to afternoon, evening, meeting with 5-6 clients a day, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
That's primarily how my day goes.
Yeah. All right. So you also do something else.
Yeah, I also run a ministry called Narrow Gate, which is a discipling ministry.
Yeah.
A lot of coaching in that, though. And so basically, so every Tuesday morning, I have a group of 7 young men. I say young men, they're in their 30s and 40s. That's young to me. And they have agreed to meet with me for 3 years every Tuesday morning. And I train them how to be a disciple maker of Jesus, how to be a disciple, and then how to make disciples.
Okay.
To be a disciple maker, in other words.
All right.
And so I always have a group like that going. Right now I got one. And again, we meet every Tuesday morning. I've also got three different groups of pastors that I meet with, and they meet with me for 2 years, but we only meet like once a month. It's just all day.
Okay.
And so a lot of that, though, is, you know, people in ministry go through transitions or going through personal challenges. So it's not just about their ministry. It's about their own soul. It's about, you know, pastors get divorced. Pastors have problem children just like everybody else.
Right.
And so we wind up doing a lot of soul work with pastors. And we have pastors all over the world. I work with pastors in Russia. We have pastors in Ukraine. I mean, we know what's going on there now. And just Saturday, I was FaceTiming with a pastor from Kiev who's now trying to transition his whole church and group and family over to Romania just so they don't get killed.
Wow.
And so, yeah, that's pretty extreme stuff there. But every Friday morning at a local golf course, I do a little Bible study for men. So I'm sitting at this golf course in a bar at 7:30, and I'm taking these men through how Scripture can change your life.
Yeah.
And they're all ages and stages, and it's a fun group, actually. We do a lot of laughing.
Yeah.
In that group. So I do some group work, to your point, mostly around ministry stuff.
Yeah.
But the individual coaching stuff is probably what takes up the majority of my time.
Right. Yeah, I've done a lot of things in bars.
Yeah.
Never studied the Bible in a bar.
It's really pretty underrated. Much
done everything else. Yeah, I bet. I bet. Yeah.
I think Jesus would have hung out in bars.
Well, I think he did, probably. Yeah, if they had him back then.
Yeah, well, he got accused of hanging out with people who would be in a bar, so that's probably where they were, right?
Right.
Now, at 7:30 on a Friday morning, let me tell you, the alcohol's not flowing. Right. I can just promise you that. We're drinking coffee.
Yeah. Yeah, that's cool. Yeah. So that's a pretty honorable place to be every day in that position with people.
It's humbling.
Yeah.
You use the word honorable. I agree. It is an honor. Because it feels like a partnership, really. It feels like every one of my clients or every person I'm coaching or discipling or working with or mentoring, I kind of look at my life in three different categories: discipling, coaching, and mentoring.
Okay.
And I kind of do different things with different people based on those three stages or categories, so to speak. But yeah, it's. I feel like they're a partner. I partner with them to optimize their life.
Yeah.
And I see it that way. I'm not bringing all the ideas to the table.
Right.
You know, they're not bringing all the ideas to the table. We're bringing them together.
Yeah.
So it's we literally form a partnership doing that. And it is an honor. I don't really have a bad day in coaching. I was thinking about it. I've been doing coaching for years now, and I can't remember a day I had a bad day coaching.
No. Yeah. Probably tough days. Heavy days.
Well, yeah. I mean, when you're dealing with somebody who's in deep grief about something, you know, you feel that.
Yeah.
But, you know, you also have to prepare yourself, and you can't take that stuff home.
Right.
You know, and so many people, so many men especially, they take the stresses of the day home, you know, and a client yelled at you or a customer yelled at you, and so you go home and kick the dog. Well, the dog didn't yell at you.
Right. Right.
You know, so you got to compartmentalize that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so I really think that helps me deal. It's called empathetic fatigue. And anybody that's in any kind of deep caring ministry or work can struggle with that if you absorb the pain of the clients you're working with.
Yeah.
And so you really can't absorb it. I just have this mindset that, you know, they're going through hell right now, but it won't always be this way.
Yeah.
And, an acronym one of my clients shared with me just the other day for hope is that hold on, pain ends.
Mm.
And I really believe that.
Yeah.
I've lived it.
That's brilliant.
Yeah, hold on, pain ends.
Yeah.
So have hope.
Yeah.
So I kind of hold out hope for them that, this is dark right now, but, you know, joy comes in the morning. And tomorrow's a new day.
Yeah, one day at a time. That's a great... There was a book in seminary that they had us read.
One Fish, Two Fish?
It was. I do not like green eggs and ham.
I never understood that.
My seminary was very cheap.
We had that one too. I never understood it.
It was a book called by Ram Dass called How Can I Help? And it really did a good job about talking about how to create your own sacred space. And there is a line in there where he says that burnout is really our intentions coming home to roost. It's because we're too connected with whoever we're helping with the result of that help.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're getting burned out because we're too connected.
Mm-hmm.
And so how do you learn to create your own sacred space when you enter into these, you know, humbling or honorable positions where you're helping someone who's in need.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I've recommended that book to a couple counselor friends too, mm-hmm. because it really helped me to, you know, and, you know, they talk about, we're just really all walking each other home.
Yeah.
You know,
that's so good.
And that's really what we're all doing. And it really reflects to kind of the Jesus principles of, you know, loving and caring for each other. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that is good. I think about like 911 operators and how lucky I am compared to them because they get the trauma, the tragedy of what's happened, but they never really get to see the end result, you know, and they never really know what happened on that night to that person now a year later. I'm working with that person a year later and I'm seeing the smile and I'm seeing the relief that things, you know, the sky didn't fall on them and they got through that. And so I just really... Like, I went through a divorce. I was a pastor for 12 years, went through a divorce with three small children, and that was the most humbling experience of my life. I mean, I'm just going to be honest. It was, I didn't know what the next second was going to hold for me. You know, with, what do you do with a divorced pastor? Do you fire them? I mean, do they have the credibility anymore to stand up and talk about
right.
marriage? So I really didn't preach much on marriage or family during that time, but it was a tragic experience for me, and I was humbled by it. I became a single dad of three small children and trying to be a pastor of a church, and it was very, very, very tough.
Yeah.
But I had some men, and it was a real, I mean, it was like life in transition. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And I had men come along, you know, and try to help me and say the right thing and do the right thing and all that. But, you know, sometimes you just have to walk through this stuff, but you just have to keep putting one foot in front of the other.
Yeah.
You know, and just trust that this is going somewhere.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I've gone through, some of that pain. And so when I'm sitting with a couple who's going through a divorce and I'm helping them figure out, how do you split up kids? How do you split up a house? How do you, you know, divide the debt, and what's the funding going to look like? And it's just a hairy, scary time for these people.
Yeah.
But you ought to see the look on their face when through it, I just kind of dropped to them, you know, 20 years ago, I was sitting in your exact seat, and I kind of smile. And I don't really have to say much after that, because
yeah,
it's like,
I get it.
I'm still breathing.
Yeah.
I'm smiling. I'm upright.
Yeah.
And it's almost like that. There's a scripture in Revelation that it's so interesting, because, you know, Revelation was written during the time of Domitian, which he made Nero look like a choir boy. Okay, what Domitian was doing to people and torture and families and Christians was horrible when John writes the book of Revelation.
Yeah.
So he's writing to that community, and he's basically not giving them false hope, like, don't worry, guys, it's going to be okay.
Right.
He basically, in that book, is summarizing, we're all going to die.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Have a nice day, right? And so we get all lost in that whole thing, but there's a scene in chapter 4 where he pictures the risen Christ in heaven, and, you know, we get all caught up in the scary stuff about it.
Right.
But the scene is this. He says, I saw him standing with the marks of slaughter. And the image there must have given those people hope. Because was he slaughtered? Yeah. He had the marks of slaughter, but he was standing.
But he was standing, yeah.
And I think that, you know, when somebody knows that you've been through some stuff in your life,
yeah,
and you're still standing,
yeah,
and you're still smiling, and you're still breathing, I think just that picture alone gives people hope.
Yeah.
You know, and so when you say things, you know, this does not define you. Your past does not define you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're going to make it through this. You are going to make it. It feels like cheap, empty phrases on a coffee cup, but it's true.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's such rewarding work, Christian. You know that. When you're working with guys in recovery and you see the progress that they've made, I mean, it's the money's nice, but that payoff is really what fuels you.
Yeah.
That's why I say I just have never, now that may change tomorrow, but I've never had a bad day.
Right. Yeah.
In life coaching.
Well, you got a lot of confidence, because there's two books that I try not to talk about ever. That's the book of Revelation and the book of Job. Those are two books I will not, I don't even want to touch.
You don't want to touch one?
Yeah. So we're talking about transition as kind of the topic.
Okay.
And one of the reasons why I thought this was appropriate is because you do that professionally, helping people in very transition.
Transition, yeah.
But because you've also made some significant transitions in your life.
Yeah.
And you talked about one, right? The transition of going from being married to being divorced.
Huge transition.
Right. So let's talk a little bit about your time, because you spent some time as a significant amount of time, 30 years, right?
30, yeah.
As a minister.
Mm-hmm.
As a pastor.
As a Methodist pastor.
Yeah. So
don't hold that against me.
Was that, talk about transitioning, let's do two things there. Let's talk about transitioning into that.
Okay.
And then let's talk about transitioning out of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what transitions you into that field?
Okay. I'll try to make this short. So when I was a young man, I was not a Christian. I became a Christian at 21, and I had no real church experience. I didn't know much about the Bible. I didn't know who. I knew Jesus died on a cross. I had no idea why.
Yeah.
I didn't know what that meant. So most of my teen young years, I just wasn't around it. I quit going to it and that kind of thing as a child. And so when I had a radical conversion. I had one of those Damascus Road conversion experiences.
Okay.
I mean, knocked off the horse blind for 3 days. So that transition was immediate and radical. October 22nd, 1989, 10 p.m. I can tell you the date.
That's my birthday.
Really?
Not 89, but 22nd.
I'll be darned. We have the same birthday. Mine's spiritual. Yours is physical. And so, yeah, it's my spiritual birthday. So that transition was pretty radical. I went from doing drugs, playing in bars, just being an idiot, to now I've given my heart to God. What does that mean? All I know is I got to stop doing that stuff. I didn't know. Yeah. And I could share that with you some other time. Just trust me for now. It was a radical overnight, bottom of the barrel, desperate situation. Okay. So that transition kind of took place abruptly. And I did stop doing drugs. I did stop carousing. I did stop craziness, all the stuff that, you know, I did in my heathen lifestyle for sure. Flaming pagan doesn't even describe it. But I knew that I was kind of a sellout guy. So I wasn't going to be one of these dabblers. Like, I'm a Christian, but, you know, hey, it's Saturday night. I mean, I was going to be sellout. And thank God a man named Keith Green came into my life, and I was on a steady diet of his music. And I just started learning immensely about the Bible and God's plan for my life and all this stuff I had no idea about before. I was looking for hope in a bong and found it in the Bible. And so that transition happened when I was asked to do music at a prison revival. I'd been a Christian for a year. I transitioned all my music from stuff I was doing in bars to learning Christian music at the time. And a lot of the old Christian music was hokey stuff, but some of the lyrics were pretty incredible. And some guy heard me and knew, hey, you've been a Christian for a year, da-da-da, will you come and do music for this prison revival?
Wow.
So I said, yeah, I'll say yes to everything, right?
And yeah.
Just, I've been a Christian for a year. I mean, I'm green. So I go into this prison revival. True story. I take my guitar and a hymn book into this to Jackson County Prison on Monday night at 7 p.m. So I go walking in there. I tell the guard, hey, I'm Mark. You know, I'm 22 years old. I mean, I didn't tell him that, but I'm just telling you. I'm here for the prison revival. I'm supposed to sing some songs, and then there's this pastor, Mr. Reverend Hill, is going to show up and preach. And he was like, okay, search me, search my guitar case, put me in a room. All the buzzers went. You've been in jail before. I mean, you know, you've ministered in jail before. And the doors lock, you know, and this stuff. And I'm in this big, empty concrete block room with jail cells on all around it.
Yeah.
And so the guard's standing there against the door with his arms folded. I open my guitar case. It's me and the guard in the room. He hits a button. All these doors open. These guys come down. It looked like Jailhouse Rock. All these guys come down in an orange suit.
Are they dancing down the steps?
They all dance down the steps, yeah. No. They grab a folding chair, and they sit in an unorganized fashion and look at me.
Yeah.
All right? I'd been in jail one other time. It wasn't for ministry purposes overnight, but this was a very different scene. I start playing the songs, and I'm like, Reverend Hill's coming, guys. You know, I'm Mark. Nice to meet you. And they sang along, you know, and
That's a big moment for them because they probably don't – this is like a highlight. They don't have a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah, definitely not a lot of stuff going on. And so they were – some of them were engaged, and some of them it was better than sitting and looking at a concrete wall, right? And this idiot with a guitar up here. And so I know like 8 songs, right? I mean, I know 100 secular songs, but I'm not going to do – Heart of Gold by Neil Young in there in front of these guys. Mm-hmm. So I do my 8 or 9 songs. Reverend Hill never shows up.
Oh.
And I say to him, okay, guys, sorry. You know, I look at the guard. He's not paying attention. And I say, hey, Reverend Hill didn't show up. You know, good night. You know, good night, Alcatraz or what, you know.
Right.
And this very large man stands up and goes, you preach.
Whoa.
And I remember thinking, I've never preached. I can't do that. I said, well, I'm not a preacher. And I'm putting my guitar away. And he said, and so he didn't fight me on it. And so I decided, well, I can tell you how I came to how I met Jesus. I don't know a sermon, but I can tell you how I met Jesus. And so I did. And in doing that, I was like, man, this feels like what I'm supposed to do.
Yeah.
And I left, and you know, the night was over with. I wouldn't say it was amazing. It was probably incoherent at best. I left, and I told the guard, I was like, the minister never showed up. And he goes, okay. Yeah. So I'm walking in my truck, and I hear this voice across the parking lot go, hey, are you Mark? And I go, yeah. And he goes, well, I'm Reverend Hill. Where were you? And I said, well, I was in the prison doing the revival. Where were you? And he said, that's not the prison, son. That's the jail. The prison's this building over here.
Oh, snap.
And I'm like, oh. I go, what? I had to sing with no preaching. And he goes, well, I had to preach with no singing. Can you show up in this building tomorrow night? And I was like, yeah. I mean, I know 8 songs. So I showed up the next night, and I did music. He preached. And we did that like 4 or 5 nights in a row. And at the end of that, he said, hey, what do you do? And I go, well, I work on ice machines. He goes, if you ever need a job in ministry, I'd love to work with you.
Wow.
I mean, I met the guy 4 out of 5 nights, you know?
Yeah.
A year later, he called me and said, I'd started an ice company. I'd started my own company. I'd put up some of my dad's retirement money he gave me to do this. And,
what do you mean an ice company? Like what?
Yeah, made ice, bagged ice, sold ice. Delivered it to stores.
Okay.
Beer stores. You know the coolers out in front of convenience stores? Yeah. You open, get a bag of
the
ice.
The ice just don't show up, right? Someone's got to bring it there.
The ice ferry. You're looking at it.
Yeah.
So I had trucks. I had ice machines. I can make 14,000 pounds every 24 hours, bag it, deliver it. I mean, I thought I was really something.
Yeah.
I was an entrepreneur with my own company.
Yeah.
My dad retired. He started helping me in it. And
he calls you a year later.
This guy calls me a year later and says, I want you to come work for me at a church. And I'm like, that's all I want to do. I mean, working for Jesus or selling ice.
Yeah.
It wasn't a terribly hard decision, other than I had to go into enormous debt to close that business down. Nobody would buy it. I liquidated my stuff. And I went into massive financial debt so I could go into ministry.
Wow.
It felt like at the time, I was just so interested in doing what God had called me to do. Now, at this time, I've only been a Christian like 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
And now I'm working at a church. I remember walking into the church and asking the pastor, you know, this is a Methodist church. I've never been in a Methodist church in my life. He just hired me. What do we believe? He said, I don't know what you believe. I told him, he goes, yeah, we believe that. So that started a 30-year run as a pastor.
Wow.
So I found my calling in prison. I mean, excuse me, the jail.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Well, you know what's interesting is this theme's been reoccurring for me, which is, and we talked about this, I think, yesterday when we were talking, is like, you know, callings kind of find you, or niches, or
yeah,
purpose, or things. And, you know, like, and I use the example, like when, even when I was working for Steve Harvey, and we went on to do this syndicate the radio show. So we were in 2 markets, and we wanted to, he quit those 2 markets, and they were going to syndicate nationwide, right? So then they get this syndication deal, which is like, you know, 7 or 8 stations, right? Mm-hmm. And then in their deal was buried just a crazy clause that if they hit this astronomical number of syndicated markets, that they would have these crazy bonuses. Well, they're on air like 6 months, and a guy who's on a competing radio station makes a public threat on air to another DJ. So you had like, it was like, I don't know, 20.
Like a DJ fight. That's
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, but I mean, like, it was really bad. Like, he said where this other DJ's kids went to school and told his listeners to go kidnap the kid.
Holy cow.
Yeah. So that happened.
This was not Casey Kasem, was it?
No, it was not. It was not Ryan Seacrest. And so you had 20-something stations who had a morning show, which is the cornerstone of the radio market or radio station, right, that morning show. Yeah. So you had 20-something stations who had that cornerstone. One day, the next day, they didn't.
Mm.
So Steve Harvey was the only one poised
to,
boom, pop into those 20 markets.
Yeah.
And there's other examples from just working with Harvey for so long, that those kind of instances, you know, it's like it's like fortune favors the bold, right? It's like being in the right place in the right time is such a huge thing. And a lot of people want to will things into existence, but here you kind of just, you literally got the gig because you made the mistake of winning into the wrong.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, when preparation meets opportunity, that's where that's the crossroads. And we don't always predict where the crossroads is going to happen. You know, you can prepare. But, you know, it's like music, for instance. I know a lot of musicians. I love music and guitars, and I'm a student. I've been a student for 40 years of the guitar, and I know some incredible musicians that'll never make it.
Yeah.
Never have made it. You've never heard of them. They could go on stage and blow away the most famous guitarist because they're so much better. But there was just certain things lined up, certain things didn't happen right, and so they prepared. But yet they've done other incredible things in their life that they didn't know they would do, you know? So yeah, this idea that you can perfectly line up all, you know, all your ducks in a row. The problem is ducks don't live in a row.
try it. Right.
It's almost like this over control, this need for over control that we have, that if change happens in my life, it's because I'm making the change happen. Well, change doesn't happen that way. Transition doesn't always happen because we want it.
Yeah.
You know, transition happens sometimes to us.
Yeah.
And then we curse it or we hate it or we, you know, we blame other people for the changes or transitions in our life. But transition is a part of life.
Yeah.
It comes with oxygen and blood pumping and it's just definitely going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, Seth Godin, you familiar with Seth Godin?
No.
He's like this famous bloggist guy. But I read his stuff often, and it's pretty good stuff. But he used this comparison of change. He said, you remember the story of Don Quixote?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Don Quixote was a nutcase, right?
Mm-hmm.
He thought windmills were giants.
Mm-hmm.
So he charged them. And the man from La Mancha, actually, you know. So he was charging these windmills because he thought they were a threat. And people are like, you know, lock this guy up. He's it's just a windmill. He's charging with his spear, and he's got full, you know, uniform on, all this kind of stuff, suit of armor. And Seth Godin talks about many of us look at change like he looked at windmills.
Yeah, right.
We just want to attack it. We don't embrace it. We don't want it. We don't understand it. And we just think as soon as we can get out of this transition to life as, I'll just use air quotes for those of you that can't see me, normal.
Yeah.
Then everything will be great. But you know what's coming?
Another
transition.
Change. Yeah.
Change. Yeah. And it's not a windmill. It's not something you can attack and beat.
Right.
It's something you got to go with and appreciate it.
Yeah.
And so the guy who is constantly, you know, the word transition is a four-letter word for him, or he hates it. You got to learn that that's just a part of life.
Yeah. Yeah. You know,
and embrace it and capitalize on it and go with it.
Yeah. And I think I've seen that in recovery when people are wanting to live a life of sobriety and they want to just make the transition, right? Yeah. And so they get 30 days of sobriety under their belt, and then they want to now begin living without doing the work of the actual transition, right? Because the transition, like the sobriety, for me, like with my experience and how I've witnessed other people experience and through this show, is that getting sober is not even a portion of it. Like the most significant thing is how do you begin to live? You know, there's a difference between sobriety and recovery. So someone can get sober, but are they living in recovery?
Uh-huh.
And living in recovery to me is that embracing the transition, right? And then the steps is such a great framework for that. Because it teaches you how to live with a new set of directions.
Mm-hmm.
And these directions are governed by God.
And don't you see that people that embrace the life of recovery, they live life with deeper meaning and purpose.
Absolutely.
Than a lot of people who just seem to float on top of the surface and everything goes right for them. And, you know, they got 2.5 children, live in a house with a white picket fence, and they have climbed the ladder of success. By the way, those people are miserable too. I work with them.
Yeah.
But But there's something about going through change, going through transition, making it, striving, that you live life at a deeper, more meaningful level. And that's what people are looking for. They're looking for deep meaning in life.
Yeah.
You know, so if you think, well, on the other side of this transition or change is where I'm going to live the deep, meaningful life, you're missing, no, this is the deep, meaningful life.
Yeah.
Your right. recovery. This.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, it's helping people, you know, when somebody comes and their life has literally crashed around their ankles, right? And they want to just, they want to fix this. They want to figure out how to get this fixed. They want to move on, all that kind of stuff. You know, me as a counselor, as a coach, as a pastor, I can't fix this for you. I can't speed up the process.
Yeah.
You know, I can't make this, I can't put Humpty Dumpty back together again for you.
Right.
You just kind of have to live into this.
Yeah. But you can walk with them and be with them during that.
Absolutely. Arm in arm.
Yeah.
We can talk through, but what was happening is that transition, that's the metamorphosis. That's mm-hmm. that's the beauty of that. You know, the metamorphosis of the caterpillar turning into the butterfly, yeah. right? If you try to help that caterpillar too fast, what happens is you open that cocoon too fast, the butterfly never gets to build up the wing strength. It dies.
Right.
So everybody's wanting transition to, they're either afraid it's about to happen, when's the other shoe going to drop kind of thing?
Yeah.
Or they're in it.
And they want to hurry up and get it over with.
Hurry up and get it over with. Why? So you can get over it because there's another transition coming, by the way.
Right.
You know, it's like the guy who stands knee deep in the ocean and the waves keep coming and he's yelling at the ocean. You're like, stop it. Enough. Right. Okay. You can do that.
Yeah.
It's not going to work.
Right. Yeah.
It's like the guy who's yelling at, you know, yelling at transition, yelling at change. Now, can you create havoc and too much transition in your life? Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, if you have a restless saboteur and the grass is always greener on the other side and you're always changing everything so much, yeah, you can create unnecessary transition in your life.
Yeah, I think that's key is it's there's a certain level of necessary suffering that comes with being a human.
Mm-hmm.
And some people might equate transition to suffering, and I think a lot of us probably do. It's the unnecessary suffering that's kind of
the
tragic.
Self-inflicted wound. Yeah, yeah,
that's the stuff that's kind of sad. And that I was the same way when I was in rehab. It was only a 6-week rehab, and you know I wanted to leave rehab so bad every day, not because I wanted to go get high, but because I wanted to go home and fix everything. Mm. And everybody there was like, you know. Luckily, it's like way in South Georgia, and it was too far of a walk, you know. And everyone was like, "Just chill, just feel, you know, follow this through.
Just be,
just be." And that was so hard for me because I wanted to hurry up and go fix it. Hmm. And I think, if I'm being honest, even in my first few years of recovery, I was so active in that fixing, and I was trying to do everything, but I didn't surrender to the process of the transition. You know, like specifically like step 6 and 7 talks about, you know, getting prepared to surrender your character defects to God. Mm-hmm. And then 7 is to humbly ask him to remove your defects. Mm-hmm. Well, the way the steps worded is God's removing the defects. Mm-hmm. But the way I always read it was I'm removing the defects.
Because you are God.
Right. But it's God that removes it. And yeah. That's a really tough, that talk about transition.
Yeah, man.
I mean, that. Cocaine's got nothing on step 7. That's really hard to let it go and say, all right, God, I'm going to let you take what you think. And so I would do things like I'll work on my cussing, or I would work on, you know, my lust, or I would work on, you know, my I need to read the Bible more. I need to pray more. I need to do this more. Yeah, I probably needed to do those things, right? But I was still so much in that driver's seat that I wasn't letting the transition unfold in my life until much later in recovery that I just, after fighting it, I just finally was like, I gave up. My arms are too short to slap box God, you know? So I just had to pull up.
Right.
So you spend this 30 years as a pastor,
mm-hmm.
and you accidentally stumble into it, right? But not, and but you did take a, I mean, you had to make a major decision and you had to, you know, go into financial debt.
I spent about a decade paying off a loan for nothing.
Yeah.
It was really difficult every month to write that check on equipment that I did not own anymore every month.
Yeah. On a pastor's salary.
On a pastor's salary, almost interest only, just to keep the thing in float.
Yeah.
Eventually, though, God is faithful, and I was able to pay it off. That was a great day. I wrote that check. It's hard to write a house payment check or a car payment check, but when you're writing a big check for nothing.
Yeah.
But I had to carry that like a millstone around my neck for probably 12 years.
Mm. Yeah, that's a significant time.
It was hard.
Yeah.
It was very hard, but, you know, God taught me so much through that, no doubt.
Yeah. Now, for someone to get to, you know, 30 years in a profession, any profession, mm-hmm. and make a transition is pretty significant. And I think, and maybe it's more so, maybe not, but to go from pastoring to transition to what you're doing now.
Yeah.
What was that? Did you walk into the wrong church one day or?
yeah. No, well, it was a fortune cookie. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, to make that transition. So I think when transitions, like especially career or calling, things like that, they're usually not, you know, overnight. So as I mentioned, going back to the one, when I'm in the jail, I think I'm in the prison, the pastor says, I'd like you to come work with me. It was still a year later before that happened. So, you know, transitions don't always happen just overnight. It takes time. It takes process. But in that time and process, so waiting time is not wasted time. And there's something that happens in the waiting that really, I think, strengthens your character. It's strength, you know, having to be patient is actually healthy.
Yeah.
You know, if we got everything we wanted immediately all the time, you know, we'd all be babies. But it doesn't happen that way. And so this transition probably took about four or five years, actually. It was on my mind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm going to be 55. Do I want to continue? Do I want to ride out my entire life in this pretty much this one profession?
Mm-hmm.
Or do I want to swing out there and try something different? Well, adventure is one of my values.
Yeah.
Actually, if you do a force value clarification, it's like number one, adventure. And so I thought, you know, let's try something new here. Let's do something new. But I didn't make the jump that day. I just started thinking, what would that look like? How could I do that? So I went and started getting some certifications
mm-hmm.
and experiencing different things and reading different books and listening to different authors. So the transition time was probably a 4 to 5 year transition for me.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't like I was just sitting waiting idle for that somebody to call me. I was doing a lot of preparation.
Yeah.
And I think that preparation is motivating, you know. So don't sit on your hands. If you feel like a transition's coming up and you don't even know what it is,
yeah.
Well, just start moving that way, growing.
Yeah.
Growing in something. And, you know, one door opens another door, and
or looking to what you can control, right?
Like
you could control getting certifications, you could control, you know, managing your mindset. So it's like when you feel a transition coming in, what are the things that you can control?
Yeah.
Right? So like for me, it's looking at, you know, what are the things, because I've been, as I got certified, right? And I'm looking to make a transition,
mm-hmm.
right? So things have slowed down for me. So what I've started doing is I started putting my attention on parts of my business, because I also have a business. Parts of my business that I just was ignoring, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I started paying attention to those things,
yeah.
You know, because this is like stuff that I had been, because I'm running around and trying to manifest transition, right? As opposed to just sitting in it and then saying, well, what can I control today?
Mm-hmm.
That's literally what I have to do. And I think a lot of us in recovery, it's about what can I do today? Just bite size, you know, just shrink it down to something small and manageable.
Right.
What can I do today to prepare for this transition that I'm hopeful will eventually come?
Yeah, what I love about what you're saying is that then you're not looking at this transition like this, you know, you're in eternal time out here.
Right.
It's that now this is going somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And what can I do today? I can do this. I can read this. I can watch this. I can map this out. I can do something, even though I know tomorrow I'm still going to feel like I'm in the same transition, but I'm not going to be the exact same person I was yesterday. I'm going to have grown. I'm going to have learned something.
Yeah.
So for me, one of my values is growth. I love to grow. I love to learn. I was the worst high school student in my high school, probably. Mm-hmm. I hated it. I mean, I read like one book until I was senior in high school. I just cliff notes, cheat, whatever you got to do. But I hated everything about school.
I was the same way. I read Lost Boys. And then I saw the movie and I was like, man, this is amazing. I should do this again. Never did it again.
Never did it again, right.
Yeah.
But I did like to learn, but I wanted to learn things my way, what I wanted to learn, history stuff. I loved history, you know.
Yeah.
But tell me a story about history. Don't make me read about it. You know, that was my thing. But I found that as I got older that growing is so much a part of life, and it's so helpful in transition that if you're looking at a transition as a growth opportunity. So there's some people that get up every day and they see the crisis in every opportunity.
Right? Yeah.
But then there are others who see the opportunity in every crisis.
Yeah.
And I've now come to the place in my life where I'm much more seeing the opportunities in crisis or transitions than I'm seeing the crisis in the opportunity. But it takes time. It takes patience. But we are constantly evolving as human beings. I mean, we are constantly getting smarter. We're constantly becoming progressively less stupid.
Hopefully.
And that really happens through transitions. I think if you look back over the landscape of your life,
yeah,
the biggest growth opportunities happened when you were in the biggest transitions.
Yeah.
You learned more during those times than you ever did, you know, sitting by the pool.
Right.
You know, it just happens that way. So why do we curse transitions? Why are we so frustrated when change happens?
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, you know, I think it's, I always say when the fear of change, when the pain of change is greater than your fear of change, then you'll change. And I sat with somebody yesterday and that's exactly basically what I told them, that my experience is people do what they want to do. Mm-hmm. And if you want to get sober, you're going to do what it's going to take. And if you don't, you won't. Mm. And then I said, let's go to a meeting. Yeah. You know, but I think that 3 years ago, I wouldn't have been in a position personally to say that to somebody, because I would have felt responsible for their sobriety.
So what made you transition from you owning their sobriety to allowing them to own it?
I think it's like you're talking about transition, right? It's learning and growing, you know, going and getting the certifications, like the Enneagram certification, being coached, getting the coaching certification, continuing to do my own work in 12-step recovery, right? Like, that's the stuff. Like, I keep doing the work, you know?
Yeah.
And I did a podcast on the Mystic Journey podcast called Keep Digging or Face Plant the Dirt. Right. And so, because my experience is, if I don't at least, you know, I don't got to dig all day every day, but if I just at least dig a little bit every day, then I'm going to stay ahead of that growth curve and be able to grow into who I am, you know, as opposed to, like you said, resting on my laurels, sitting by the pool and thinking I got this figured out. And I think a lot of harm has been done by people who think they figured it out. Yeah,
I don't doubt that at all. I think, you know, I would say that for me, when you get to the place where change and transition is no longer you know, the big hairy beast, you know, I really do think that it means all the world. It makes everything different, because you just kind of let it happen. It come to you. It's like the fruit of the Spirit in Galatians 5. It talks about, you know, the nine fruits of the Spirit, what it's like, what happens when you live in the Spirit. And the last one is self-control.
Yeah.
And so most of us, we're controlling people. We're trying to control situations, transitions, change, whatever. We can't. So the better life happens when you stop being controlling. Be in control without being controlling.
Yeah, that's good.
But self-control doesn't, you can't just wake up on a Monday and obtain self-control, right? It comes from, I believe, you know, being in tune with who God's created you to be and then living in that long enough for fruit to happen.
Yeah.
But there is no greater, in my opinion, there's no greater byproduct in life than having self-control.
Yeah.
Personally.
Yeah. We're talking about transitions, and our producer was just making transitioned outside, I think, to take a piss.
Oh, I thought UPS was here or something.
That might be a sign we're talking too long. Commercial break. Yeah. When's the commercial break coming? Yeah. So as we're wrapping up about the conversation for transition, any final things, anything that you had on your preparation for tonight or you feel like we really should communicate and talk about?
I guess I would, not to oversimplify this, because, you know, it's really hard to go through change. Trust me. We've all been through, everybody that's listening to this has been through change. It's just part of the human experience. But what would happen if for the rest of your life you embraced change? That when change happened, instead of thinking, holy crap, what does this mean for me? This is going to be bad, you know, judging it. What would happen if we said, change is good? Change happens. Bring it on.
Yeah.
Let's deal with it. I think the perspective shift that could happen for you could actually raise the quality of your life. Because here's the newsflash. It's happening. It's going to happen. You're in it. Yeah. There's changes coming tomorrow that you don't know, that you can't see yet.
Yeah.
So instead of, you know, charging them like a windmill that you think is a beast, it's not. It's just part of the human experience. So embrace change.
Yeah.
Change is good. Change is good. And so and especially, my God, if you're in recovery, I mean, isn't that the story of recovery?
Yeah.
That transformation, it's the story of the Bible, transformation.
Yeah.
God is inviting all of us to change. God is inviting all of us to be transformed, to transition.
Yeah.
And then one day we'll all get that ultimate
transition,
you know?
Final butterfly flying up in the sky.
Well, that's what people, that's what they call it. When somebody passes away,
yeah,
they've transitioned.
Yeah. You know? Well, I think a couple of weeks ago we talked about, you know, when Jesus talks about do not worry, and he points to nature, right? And it's always been so profound to me that he points to nature, because nature is always in transition.
Always.
And you don't ever see
that. Except unless you live in Miami. It never changes. It's just 85, rains at 4 o'clock.
Yeah, right. But, you know, and trees are, you never see trees complaining about winter, you know? They're going with it. And I think it's interesting that Jesus would point to the natural order of things, you know?
It's a great point.
Yeah. And so for me, that's what, you know, looking at nature, taking walks, those are things that ground me to that reality, that there's a constant, this earth, this whole thing is constantly evolving and changing and growing and dying and being reborn. And this stuff is happening every day around us consistently.
Yeah.
So why would we think that natural order would not be existing internally in our own world?
Yeah. Right? And we don't think it's weird that there's four seasons and things change. Like, we don't look at that and go, what the heck?
Yeah.
And it's the same way in life. I think we go through transitions in life like stages. You know, when I was, I had fun in my 20s and 30s. I wouldn't go back there for anything. You know, I was in a lot better shape, but I didn't know anything. Mm-hmm. There was no depth, no real depth to my life like there is now, deeper meaning. So I really think that the older you get and the more seasons you go through, the more transitions you make, I really do see a tremendous amount of benefit in it. It's kind of the seasons of a man, so to speak.
Yeah.
The Bible speaks to that a lot about the wisdom. See this, when I had these platinum blonde highlights put in, you know, my wisdom increased. The Bible talks about that gray hair, silver hair is a sign of, you know, wisdom.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I know you color your hair and all that, but no.
Right.
You're trying to hide your wisdom. I get that. No, I'm kidding. But there's something to be said about going through the seasons of life and embracing them.
Yeah.
Going with it, embracing the change.
Yeah.
And then for those who are you're deeply spiritual. You know this. Is ask yourself in these transitions, Lord, what are you teaching me? What do you want me to know? You know, this is not what I asked for. This is not what I wanted. This is not what I thought was going to happen.
Yeah.
But what are you teaching me?
Yeah.
If you can kind of take that attitude, I think it changes everything.
Yeah.
You know, versus Lieutenant Dan. Remember the movie Forrest Gump? Lieutenant Dan's in the on the mast and he's screaming at God, you know, and all this kind of stuff. There's a lot of people that do that when it comes to change and transition.
Yeah.
Embrace it.
Yeah. Well, and that's what that step seven says, right? Humbly asked him to remove us of our shortcomings. And the humbly is so key.
Yeah.
Yeah. Remain. Because when you're asking humbly, you're willing, you're in a position of acceptance and surrender, and whatever God is can move and do what it's going to do anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. And, and God, so we're all alive right now. I mean, everybody listening to this is.
Yeah.
And that's for a reason. I mean, you weren't born 100 years ago. You're not born 100 years from now. You're born right now at this time to be present to what's happening in the world, happening in your life. And so I go back to the worry thing about Jesus. Don't worry about tomorrow, because most of this, that's what we mostly worry about, right, is the future.
Mm-hmm.
Well, don't do that. Live right now and embrace what's happening to you. You're not going to be here forever. You're not going to be stuck in this situation forever. You're going to transition. You're going to change, and it's going to be good. You've got to believe that. To me, that's when life becomes really, really good.
Yeah.
That's where the juice is, man.
Yeah, that's the pudding. Well, Mark, I really appreciate you being here, rapping with me on this topic.
Yeah.
And, you know, sharing your own experience with transition and how you're using that to be helpful to other people in their life. So if anyone's listening and want to get more information from Mark or learn how to contact him, wisepathcoach.com.
Mm-hmm.
Wisepathcoach.com, or just Google Mark Danzy. And don't look at the images, because you might get one from pre-prison preaching. So
yeah,
thank you, Jeff, for being here on the Ones and Twos. This has been a presentation of Most High Ministries, Most High Media. This is the Most High Show, and we out.